And we are back with episode 825 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
This is Gary from Jacksonville, and actually, as much as I enjoy some of our precursor talks, I really enjoy the meat of discussing some of these episodes that we have coming up, so
yay.
Oh, and there's some good ones coming up, too. So certainly quite a lot of good things to talk about. Yes, we are talking about things from the last couple weeks, so I think that we have a pretty... what's the word that I want to use here? A short list? Is that the word that I should use?
Concise.
But I will say that all of these shows, as we have said many times before, are coming in above average. Certainly, the bulk of them are at an 8 or higher. In fact, a couple weeks ago, we had 6 shows, and all of them were between 8 and 9.5. So we were really humming along there. And some other shows recently, maybe not quite as strong, but certainly we are in the having a good summer here as far as some of these shows are concerned. So what I want to go ahead and do is start off. I know that everybody wants our opinions on Game of Thrones. We'll get to that. Don't worry, we have lots to talk about there. But we're going to go ahead and talk about some of these other shows first. Before we do any of that, though, Gary, if you could give your disclaimer.
Yes. In our efforts to give you a complete and concise description as well as our thoughts on these shows, we will occasionally reveal who lives, who dies, who kisses each other, and anything else that comes into mind that occurred during the show. So we don't apologize so much as give you fair notice that we will be discussing anything and everything, so you've been warned.
That's right. You have indeed been warned. So the first show that we're going to start off here is actually a show that I think is probably the closest to average out of all of them, and that would be The Return of the Last Ship. Now, there were 2 episodes that came out in the premiere. The first was In Medias Res, which in the season 4 premiere, Nathan James faces yet another global disaster 16 months after thwarting the coup in America. And that was followed by The Pillars of Hercules. Having lost their only lead, the crew of the Nathan James continues their search for an item that could save the world. So this came in at an average of 7.25. Gary, I mean, you gave it a pretty much a dead average, and I think you only saw the first episode. So what were your concerns or thoughts about this show?
Almost a year has passed since we last got to see this show, and I wish more things were fresher in my mind. I was scratching my head at first to remember where we had ended up. It came back to me after a while, and I guess that's sort of my concern, is that the show... including the season, at least so far, has seemed so formulaic that I could turn the dial to the season and for the cause. And other than that, we're having the same shows all over and over again. We see the captain in doubt as to his role and purpose. We see everyone doing their best job they can, and you know, some sort of MacGuffin that they're in search of. We had started to slip out of that a little bit, when we had the coup for America and things along those lines. And then here we are at the beginning of this season, feeling right back where we started. And that's sort of disappointing for me. I enjoy the military action. My friends who were enlisted in the Navy love the show obsessively, saying that they hit it spot on with so much stuff that it's like being back in the Navy without actually having to do work.
And that's good.
Yeah, and I enjoy the characters. I enjoy is it Mr. Dane? I'm glad to see he's back and with the production again. As I remember, there were issues with his health, mental health, if I recall. So I'm glad that it appears that he's overcome them enough to resume shooting schedule again. And I like it. As I said, I don't feel like the. They broke the mold and then sort of patched it back up again, which is disappointing. I don't know how – as much as I love this show, I don't think I want to watch season 2.5. I want season 3, so please give me season 3.
Yeah, and I mean the third season, it went from the whole, you know, solving the plague problem to dealing with the political issues – you know, between the Chinese and the coup in the U.S. And it really became a completely different show. And I enjoyed that transformation because it continued to go along that line of, you know, it's those of us who remembered Crusade from the day. It was kind of really just hitting all those same story points that we anticipated, and we enjoyed seeing all this happen. And then this year they come back and it's just another plague. and they jump right into the story without any real buildup. And like you said, for a while, I thought maybe I had just tuned in at the wrong time. I know that the episode was in medias res, which of course means starting in the middle, but did that confuse me. And then it just seemed, like you said, formulaic. There was a lot of talk from everyone involved in the production about how they were this season storyline is inspired by the Odyssey. However, what I didn't expect them to do is just blatantly ripped off the Odyssey so directly. There are things in there that are literally word for word transposition for all that they are trying to adapt it.
I thought him being in Greece was a little over the top, obvious. But,
and he's going under an assumed name, and everyone calls him No Man, and it's like, really, really, this is like way too on the nose. Inspired by is one thing. But it really feels like the writers didn't know what to do and just said, hey, why don't we just do a modern version of the Odyssey? Okay. And I'll say this, after the first episode, it just continues to get more and more blatant. The second episode has some things that are just hitting you over the head with it. And that's the thing that I find disappointing, is that, you know, we had such a great political thriller last season, and this season, really?
Yeah.
This is what they choose to do. It's just... like you said, it's disappointing that this feels like a step back, not a step forward. I agree with you completely on that one.
Yeah, the fact that they need to still keep it... I mean, I guess it's the nature of the story that they want to keep it sort of ship-related to keep the original hook of the and attraction of the show. But at the same time, it's just so limiting and... Wouldn't it be nice if we split the crew up and had a second ship or something at the time, or just, you know, something to diversify it a little bit more from its original pattern? So we'll see what happens. But yeah, I thought they definitely feel like the writers have a lack of imagination.
Yeah, something's just missing from the mix this year, right? At least from the start. I'm hoping that maybe they need to get their feet on the ground. Maybe this was just a side effect of having to rearrange things for Eric Dane's situation. But it was a little bit disappointing, and I think that it is the weakest of the shows that we currently have on the docket.
That being said, I will watch Bridget Regan in anything, so it really didn't matter what the show was.
Yeah, but, I forgot that's just me,
and even if she's not in a white dress, I'm just fine watching her. So
just you. Because okay. I was watching, and her character showed up, and I literally did one of those double takes, like, wow, she looks familiar. Well, I wish I remembered who she was. And I looked her up and went, oh, that's why.
Anyway, but yeah, that's just a side note. So, you know, I'll... bear with the show.
Yes. Now, another show that is kind of still up and down this season is Dark Matter. So what are your thoughts on the last couple episodes as they are going into, really, they're kind of driving towards their season finale, which they had the Dwarf Star Conspiracy. One of the android's newly discovered memories leads the crew to a suspicious Dwarf Star facility on Nova 17. And then that was followed up by My Final Gift to You, which there was no recap available for that. But anyway. What were your thoughts on these couple episodes?
Oh my gosh. I wasn't expecting an episode like the Dwarf Star Conspiracy, but it turned out so well. We got the Android's history now, as well as Three's history. And that was really nice, as well as I'm enjoying them. Oh gosh, I keep forgetting her name, and I'm looking at her picture right in front of me. The Android's actor, the actress. The actress who plays the Android is getting such a nice role as the doctor, and with the British accent as well. I watched the episode twice to look for an accurate. For details. Anyway, that was really nice. I've often felt that her portrayal as the android is less than stellar. It seems very, very cold and stilted. And yes, I know she's supposed to be a machine, but regardless, it doesn't feel very well done to me. However, as I see her put in, I guess for lack of a better term, her emotion chip or act as this scientist, the actress really blossoms for me. She does an incredible job as these other roles, making me wish that she'd either leave the emotions on full time or somehow bring this other scientist back full time. But I know that won't happen given the way the story's going. But that being said, that was amazing, as well as this whole conspiracy around Three and her nanites. And there's literally a full army of her waiting to come out. That's just really was amazing. And not only that, but they have all, you know, a whole bunch of stuff going. So that was really I found it nice how they're world building at the same time. And it is starting to expand the universe out a little bit more. I've felt that, as I think I've said in other episodes, how I sort of feel detached. We hear about this corporate war going on, but we, you know, other than Zyron, we don't really see much of it. So it's nice to sort of reach out into the world a little bit more. And I'm liking some of the details and adventures. We also have Five's girlfriend ending up with an android body. I guess android robot, android body. And that was an interesting twist that I never thought she'd actually leave that sort of virtual space that she was in. And so that was an interesting twist, even if she is separated from us for a while. So I'm really looking forward to where it's going. We have this, besides the ongoing war, we have the issue with Zyron and him getting kicked out of the monarchy, I guess, for lack of a better term. Then we have this whole android conspiracy thing really starting to ramp up as well. So we have three big plots that either one, any of them could be a whole season by itself. So I'm just wondering what string they're going to grab onto and go with, or are we going to continue to juggle all three? Or are they all related somehow? Who knows? But anyway, it's a very busy show, and I'm happy for it.
Yeah, I mean, it's now going to its season finale at this point, so I guess it's interesting to see how they're going to end up, and I wonder if they are, in fact, going to end up being able to wrap this up and go into another season.
Yeah, so. I know the ratings have not been amazing, so I don't know, but I've heard it's not an expensive show, so we'll have to...
I believe that. we've remarked before that it seems like they've recycled a lot of sets from other shows, so...
Yes.
So the next show on the list, I'm just going to go through a couple here as that you know, rounded up their seasons. Since we talked about season finales, we actually had two series finales. We had Orphan Black, series finale to Right the Wrongs of Many, with Helena forced to take shelter behind enemy lines. It's a bloody last stand for survival as Sarah and Art struggle to protect her and end the siege on the Sestras once and for all. And it was a favorable ending. I thought that it was pretty fitting, and Edmund did too. He said dispensing of the latest underwhelming villain was a good choice, allowing them to focus on the Sestrahood. In the end, the machinations were incidental. Tatiana's creations are the heart and soul of the show. And yes, I think that it came to a fairly fitting end, although I still feel like it was maybe a season or two too late. Also coming to a series end was Turn, and we both, Edmund and I, gave this one a 9. We both thought that this was a really good end. Well done end to the series, Edmund says. Enjoyed Abe and George Washington's reprimand hinging on Washington understanding a farmer's needs. Downgraded for overly mawkish touch of having Thomas die in the War of 1812. And honestly, we didn't need to hear him say he always loved Anna Strong, especially to a son that we then discover is already dead. They made that abundantly clear throughout the series, as well as giving very clear reasons why they wound up with their other partners. Yes, I also felt that the whole thing with Thomas was a bit of an unnecessary downer. To have a fairly uplifting ending and then have the last few moments be about the fact that his son died in the War of 1812. That's kind of terrible. But it was still a strong end to a pretty good show. Turned out to be pretty good, despite the fact that not too many people were watching it. I'm glad that it got to have a solid ending. Let's see. Beyond that, what else do we have on the list here? Oh, well, we also have Twin Peaks. And I have to say, Gary, I don't know if you have been, if you're a little behind or not, or if you've kind of set this aside until you can mainline it. But the last few episodes have really been at the top of their game. Now that they are in the final stretch, the third act of the season, so to speak, there are a lot of nice resolutions taking place. Lots of story threads are coming together, and it's starting to make sense why things were the way they were earlier.
Yeah.
It really does feel like it was all just mapped out, and even though it was very sprawling at the beginning, there was really a purpose to each thing that was done. There's very little that is coming across as kind of random any more than David Lynch is ever random, but it is coming together quite nicely. There's still, of course, at this point, three episodes to go for the last bit here of season three, so to speak, and we'll see whether or not they can stick that landing. Apparently, the two-part finale will be airing while we're at DragonCon, so I doubt that I'll have a chance to see it before before we leave, but certainly by the time that we come back, it will all be wrapped up. So we'll see how that turns out. And that leaves on our list here the two episodes of Game of Thrones. So these were Season 7, Episodes 5 and 6. We had Eastwatch, where Daenerys demands loyalty from the surviving Lannister soldiers, Jon heeds Bran's warning about White Walkers on the move, Cersei vows to vanquish anyone or anything that stands in her way. And we also had episode 6 of the 7th season, Beyond the Wall. Jon's mission continues north of the wall, but the odds against his ragged band of misfits may be greater than he imagined. So, before we get into the specifics, just overall thoughts for these episodes, Gary?
Very strong. All the world building and character building they've done is paying off in spades, because even as the conversations are going on north of the wall, you know both people very well, or at least well enough at this point to be able to sort of relax and enjoy their talks without feeling like you have to learn something about them or trying to interpret their motivations or anything like that, which is made for very enjoyable scenes, even if one or two of them were kind of odd. So I'm thinking of Jon Snow trying to give back Ravenclaw?
I forget the name of his sword, but yes, I understand.
Yeah, that was I see where he'd offered it back. It just seemed like an awkward type of scene, but the rest of it flowed very well. I enjoyed that a great deal. Trying to think, Tyrion's council again seems to fall to some extent on deaf ears. I don't know if Daenerys's thoughts is okay, whatever he says, I won't do. Yeah. Because it certainly seems that way. Oh, okay, what do you suggest? Oh, okay, I'm gonna go left instead of right. But it almost seems comical. But I feel that she does actually weigh his counsel, just chooses not to take it. I'm continuing to enjoy the heck out of it. I almost feel like I'm starting to understand Bran just a little bit, which is scary. And the only extraneous thing that I realize it is what it is, but at the same time, I wish that that the Stark women were not at odds with each other. They've barely been back two episodes together, and all these Littlefinger machinations are playing through, and it just seems. Something that I wish didn't happen. I mean, it fits, and I understand, why it's happening, and at least some of why. But still, it leaves a bad taste in my mouth. But that's just me. I'd rather see them happy for at least till the end of the season.
Well, I have my theories about that, and we'll get into that momentarily. But
oh, okay,
yeah. Let's see, just to kind of go through here, and I agree with you that. It seems like Daenerys right now is basically saying, "What are you saying, Tyrion? What are you advising?" Okay, I'll do exactly the opposite of it, which I think is also kind of trying to generate tension, where right now the story is driving so directly towards certain conclusions that they have to do something to keep it from being just straight up playing out the way that it's supposed to. I mean, at this point, I'm waiting in the finale for them to just come out and say Jon's ancestry. Because they've all but said it. I mean,
Especially at the with the maesters, that seems a little almost painful, painfully forced to put it out there.
Yeah, with Gilly and everything else, they really just said that. Kind of came right out. But what's interesting there to me is that I think as fans, we all assumed that it was an illegitimate affair between Rhaegar and Lyanna. The fact that they actually got married.
Puts a whole different spin on
it. It really puts a different spin, because now he may actually be more legitimate than Daenerys, which would be really intriguing to see how that plays out. But I expect that to be laid out in the finale. I think that they have to kind of just let that all come to at least to someone's attention officially. And I think that Bran and Sam need to have a conversation to get all that out. But it does make things interesting because of the fact that Daenerys, in the show at least, is barren. So if that's the case, then everything that Tyrion is saying about succession, that's why I think that that's what all of that was really designed to do. I think that it was an example of the writers trying to find a way to bring it to the attention of the audience that there was a succession problem. Mm-hmm. And that way, when the news about Jon comes out, for the people who haven't figured it out yet, it'll all kind of, the implications will be a lot more clear. Because otherwise it just doesn't make sense for them to be at odds over that topic. Gendry coming back definitely makes things interesting. Technically, he is the legitimate heir to the throne right now, even more than any of the Targaryens. But I don't think he's going to make a claim. I think he's going to back Jon. And I think that that is also pretty obvious where they're going with that. Either he's going to die or he's going to bend the knee to Jon. What do you think of this whole thing of Cersei claiming to be pregnant? Do you think she is?
I don't doubt that she wishes she was.
Hmm.
I mean, her brotherly relations don't look like they've ceased. However, he was gone for... Wow, traveling time is somewhat of a nebulous concept in this show, but I will still say he was gone for more than a month.
Mm.
I would assume. So that would be interesting, especially if it was with our wonderful Ironborn guy. I don't know. I think it's a ploy just to somehow establish her position as queen, that she's like the holder of the throne, not the actual throne, maybe to divert something from herself. But yeah, you never know.
I know. I have this feeling that she's not actually pregnant. Or if she is, that it isn't his, as you're saying. My guess, completely without any type of foreknowledge at all, because at this point no one has foreknowledge other than the people who are writing the story for the show. I have a feeling that that's going to factor into however Cersei falls. I think that she's going to go nuts, and my prediction at this point is that Jaime's going to end up killing her and then killing himself. Kind of a nice tragic end to their story. To their tragedy, and that leaves open Tyrion as the last of the Lannisters to be the head of that house. And I think that that's pretty much the way that it's going to play out. At this
point. Yeah, well, I think it's always been at least assumed that Tyrion would be the last Lannister standing.
Yeah.
So
I think that that's... Jaime is, at this point, he's always been racked with guilt over what happened in his past, and I think that that's just the only way that it makes sense for it to play out at this point.
He does seem like an honorable man trapped in a dishonest life.
Yes. That's one way of putting it, for sure.
Yeah, and I could definitely, you definitely sort of feel that, especially when, it stood out for me when he released Brienne.
Mm-hmm.
And it, you can sense his, although it might not be easy to see, his nobility from time to time. It's there. Just as when he gave, when they were invading the last keep, and they gave Alanna the honorable way out with poison, not stabbing her or throwing her off or hanging her, but giving her the decency, even though if had he known what she said would said probably might have not, but at the time he was doing the honorable thing, and I agree with you, he seems like an honorable soul, and he might even kill her just because it's what has to be done.
Yeah, I think that's why he's going to, and I think that it's just he's not going to see any type of future for himself after that. I think he's too wound up in their tryst over the years that he can't escape it, and that's going to be the end for him. But I still feel like that gives Tyrion something in terms of his future. Let's see here. Beyond that, hold on. To reopen that page that I just accidentally closed. So yeah, the sisters. Here's where I fall with that. I have a theory with that too. And it's similar to what I was saying with Tyrion and Daenerys. I think that the whole point of them being at odds with one another is so that Sansa would learn about Arya's abilities and her skills. And it creates tension that the audience is like, oh no, is she going to do something bad to Sansa? But she comes right out and tells Sansa, I could take your face and I could be you. And I feel like that actually what's going to happen is that Sansa's going to see that as an opportunity for Arya to replace Littlefinger.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Because that would be perfect. Because Sansa's been saying over and over again, I only need him because I need the soldiers of the Vale.
Yeah, the Knights of the Vale, yeah.
Right? So, And everyone's been telling her again and again, why are you keeping this guy around? Why are you keeping him around? Well, it's a really good point. And I think that she'll see this as the opportunity to say, I can have both. I can have Littlefinger if Arya takes on his appearance as needed.
Mm-hmm.
And that will get rid of one of their biggest problems. And I have a feeling that's going to be in the finale.
Well, you know, she could also marry him and then have something.
It's possible, but that would be pretty hilarious because that would really show that Sansa had taken that turn.
A player, right?
But
well, if you think about it, the Knights of the Vale were her aunt's her aunt's house, so you know she might have claim. So it would be interesting.
Yeah. It would be very interesting to see how that played out. But I think that's going to be the big show to be that, you know, if Jon is not a Stark, these are the Starks coming back.
Yes,
Sansa, and Sansa showing that she's finally a player by getting her sister to do that move. Let's see. Also, if we go down the list here, we talked about Sam. All right, so let's talk about what happened with Jon up beyond the wall. First of all, I don't understand how this was supposed to be a good plan.
I agree. Considering that most of the walkers travel in groups, I don't really see how they felt like they were going to be able to get a single walker away.
And you have a dragon. You have a friend, at least, that has dragons. You've convinced her that your plan is sound to grab one of the dead. Never mind the fact that I think that Cersei is not necessarily going to play along just because she sees one of the dead. She already has one in her house.
So you think Daenerys was on board?
I think that she's on board enough to let Jorah go and all of that. But I think that the plan would have made more sense if Daenerys had, say, hung out at Eastwatch instead of all the way down at Dragonstone. It would have made things, the timeline, a lot less hard to believe. Not only that, but you've got a dragon. Fly up, grab some of the dead people, fly away. Done. Instead, they did this whole mission, and you could tell from the beginning that things were not going to end well. Of course, the price was enormous. Granted, until the dragon got killed, it was basically all the red shirts, but it just was like, wow, who thought this was a good plan? Maybe we need to spend another day working out the details a little more. they really rushed into it, and it just felt like everything was very poorly thought out. No one scouted ahead to see, okay, can we create circumstances where we can maybe isolate a few people? It seemed like everything was just really poorly thought out. Now, it also made me wonder, okay, now we know that, you know, the Night King has one of the dragons, basically an undead dragon at his disposal. I think we all predict that this is going to be how he gets the wall to fall. How is the Night King going to have the wall fall without that dragon?
I didn't think he needed the wall to fall. Now that it's frozen over, they're walking right around it.
No, I don't think that's what they were going for, but maybe that's what he was hoping to do, but now he doesn't have to do it because he's got a dragon. But I just keep wondering to myself that, okay, I see how the plot now delivers him with a weapon that makes the situation dramatically worse because he can just take out, he doesn't have to go through a castle or anything. He can go right through the middle. But what was he going to do? Maybe he was just going to go around. But if he couldn't go around, what was he going to do? It's kind of a plot convenience for it to happen this way. And I wonder if it's because we're getting the Cliff Notes version of the story because they're moving so fast. But it just felt like there were a lot of plot holes in this. As much as I loved the episode, and man, did they make it tense. and it was a lot of fun, and definitely it was shocking when, you know, one of the dragons went down and all of that. But there were some real glossed over things in there, I thought. Or am I being too critical?
Well, I thought that was his intention. That's why they were sending the wildings to Eastwatch, was because they thought he was going to come through right there. And so I just assumed he was, and that was just a it wasn't, definitely was not planned. I wonder if they even knew there was a dragon, but I feel they're just so old that spear he had, they are so old that they had fought dragons before, so it was no big deal to them. It was just a convenience. But I think they were just going to march right around where they were going. We talk about the wall being sort of impenetrable, but in some ways it's not. And as I recall, when the wildings were attacking, think of all those flying things that burst out of the ice to knock everyone down through the, off the wall and stuff like that. So they had defenses for people to be climbing the walls and all sorts of stuff. So I question how impenetrable the wall is. I think it's just a defensive fortification, but by no means is it some absolutely impenetrable barrier. That's why they had to have it manned and ready to defend against it originally, because it was only a stopgap. It was not something to permanently hold them back forever. And I guess maybe that's what people start to think. But, think when they start talking about the Night Watch of old, where they had the Night's Watch, where they had thousands of men on that wall, and, the armories of and supplies that it had to have, and all the varying things. It was a battlefront. It wasn't a wall to retreat to so much as, just a wall to stand up and aim against these guys. So I really think the wall has maybe taken on too much respect as a boundary. It's just, I don't think it's something that would have stopped these people forever. That's why, as I said, they had to have these fortifications against the wall being scaled and things of that nature, because it had happened before.
That's possible.
I just think the wall is not the impenetrable barrier that perhaps now we feel it was. Maybe against wildings it was, but certainly not against the other guys.
Yeah, and maybe that is true, that it was it's been talked up, and maybe this is just going to make it even easier for them to funnel through very quickly if there's a big chunk missing that they were able to take advantage of. So let's see here. Was there anything else from these two episodes that kind of jumps out at you?
Let me think. Okay, we covered Winterfell. We covered Beyond the Wall. We covered King's Landing. We covered Stormwatch. With the little scene with Varys and the Red Witch. What's her name?
Melisandre.
Melisandre. What the heck was going on there? I feel there was something going on, and honestly, it went right over my head. I rewound it and watched it once, and I still didn't quite get what they were going on about. Is it that they were going to turn sides against Daenerys? I couldn't quite figure out what they were saying by not saying it.
No, I don't think so. I think that at the end of the day, what was kind of being said is that, at least from Melisandre's point of view, she has a role to play, and she's likely to die when she returns to Westeros, and she was predicting that Varys would die as a part of all of this too, which I think makes a certain amount of sense, because in order for things to kind of progress past this game that they've been playing since the beginning, both he and Littlefinger need to die, because they've been the kind of people playing, the game more than anybody. And once things are where Varys wanted them to be, his function in the story kind of ends. So it kind of makes sense that he's going to have to go at some point. But I think that's all they were doing, was foreshadowing the fact that something horrible is going to happen to Varys.
Okay.
I don't know what, but, there's plenty of opportunities for bad things to happen to people on this show. So let's see here. I can't think of anything else either that really jumps out. But let's go ahead and just wrap up with the thoughts of some of the other folks. For Eastwatch, the fifth episode, Nadim gave it an 8, saying, not the most game-changing hour, but still an intriguing enough episode. Henry gave it a 9, saying, titling the episode after East Watch by the Sea, the fortress on the wall that is now manned by Tormund, a wildling would certainly add to the impression that the majority of the episode would be set in the north and beyond the wall. They subverted that expectation by making East Watch a pause before the big battle to come, which does make structural sense with the next episode being the penultimate one of the season. Edmund said, "Yes, it's a silly plan. Will a bedraggled skeleton convince Cersei of anything? But the build-up to the Fellowship of the Wall was glorious." I like to think of them as the Westerosi A-team, but okay. And then for Beyond the Wall, which was, of course, the big episode up above in the north, Nadim gave it a 10, saying some narrative missteps aren't enough to diminish Beyond the Wall's brutal emotional impact. This is one heart-stopping hour of television. Henry gave it an 8.5, saying, "I sit here stunned. I may have just witnessed the saddest, darkest, bleakest episode of Game of Thrones ever. And that's saying something given the various tragedies that have littered the landscape of the show." Edmund also gave it an 8.5, saying, "Spectacular as the action was, the show is straining under the breakneck speed. The Gendry to Wall to Dragonstone to Rescue timeline was ridiculous, and not losing any significant characters equally so for a show known for Ned's death and the Red Wedding. And yeah, just a reminder, called it on the Ice Dragon." Nice, Edmund.
Oh, I thought Tormund was gonna.
Yeah, I thought so too, or Jorah, one of those two.
Yeah.
But what do you got to say? All right, well, that's pretty much it for our episode of discussion. Any last thoughts?
No, I think we've covered everything.
I think we have as well. So what we're going to go ahead and do is bring this week to a close. As I said, we will be back in 3 weeks after Dragon Con and Colossal Con East.
Ooh.
Yes, 3 weeks from now, we will be back with lots of stories. And maybe, who knows, maybe we'll actually have enough discussion for 3 episodes that week. It's possible.
I'll take notes now.
Take notes now. That's right. So hopefully in between now and then, if you are available, we will see you guys on Discord during Dragon Con. Other than that, until then.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google Plus, under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as Fair Use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the Critical Myth.